Hey, it's Shane with Hard Money, Hard Knocks, a Bitcoin podcast dedicated to shine light on Bitcoiners working hard to improve Bitcoin adoption. You can listen to Hard Money, Hard Knocks on Fountain App, Spotify, Apple, YouTube, Node Runner. And also right now, the current Bitcoin price is $24,500. One US dollar could buy you 4,082 Satoshis, and the current block height is 748,964. And I just want to start off by saying thank you to anybody listening to the previous episodes. I've been having production issues, so if you've been bearing with me through it, I really appreciate you listening still. And a mic is coming this week, so those issues hopefully should be going away here soon. So once again, just thank you very much for listening still, and hopefully things will turn around here soon. But for today, we got Corey from the San Diego Bitcoiners Group. Corey, thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Shane. Look forward to it.
Yeah, for sure. So a little background. Corey helped me out getting going with a Lightning node when I was setting one up for Lengthwise Brewing Company in Bakersfield, California. And just very helpful and patient with me as a non-techie newbie to the scene. He was just really helpful, even though I kept asking him a lot of dumb questions, probably in his eyes. So Corey, just really thank you so much for your patience. And one of the reasons why I wanted to do this podcast is because so many meetup organizers are really helpful and great people in the Bitcoin space. So thank you for doing Satoshi's work and what you're doing in San Diego.
Yeah, happy to do it. You know, it was kind of a learning experience for me too, because I had been running a Lightning node on, you know, on my Raspberry Blitz for a little while, but I hadn't set up anything merchant related, but I was able to answer some of the questions just based off my experience and then other things I like looked up. So it was like, it's always a learning experience for me to help people out. So that's one of the reasons why I like to do it.
Yeah. And like I said, I was just so new to like computer stuff in general. Like there's just so many things. And now looking back now, it's like, wow, I could have saved so much time probably. But you know, that's what helped get me here. Is I come from a non-technical, non-computer background, so getting my feet wet with my node was such a great experience. And now I'm in the Bitcoin mining scene, so you know, it's just been very helpful getting my toes wet.
Yeah, that's great, man. I mean, the fact that you got into it relatively recently and we're already onboarding people, I think is no small feat. So I mean, you got to give yourself credit on that for sure. Yeah.
No, it was awesome. So luckily, it was a guy who orange-pilled me, so it wasn't too hard to convince him to do it. So yeah, I just had to tell him I knew what I was doing.
That's great. One thing that I wish I had spent more time doing recently, or just in general, is onboarding more businesses. I mean, so our meetup, we go to Quantum Brewing in Kearny Mesa, which is like 10 minutes from me. It's pretty close by. And it's a small, it's owned by one guy, and he's usually the main employee working it. But I didn't, he accepts meetups, but I didn't even get him to do that. That was also by Hedy Wook. He was in town for work and went in there on his lunch break. It was talking about Bitcoin. And so he convinced him. So I haven't even onboarded any businesses before. You know, that's something I want to spend more time doing at some point.
Yeah, it's just, man, it's so hard right now. Businesses are struggling so much just to get by as well, like many Americans and people around the world. So, you know, it's just, it's when it's on Bitcoin's time, I guess, it'll present itself. So, you know, it's only a matter of time, just businesses getting familiar with Bitcoin and their dollar getting wrecked even more. And maybe some more will pop up within the next couple of years for sure. So you'll have your hands full here soon. And once things slow down again, then it'll be time for you to get out there.
I think so.
Why don't you go ahead and give a little bit of your Bitcoin background, just kind of how you got into it, heard about it, and what keeps you bullish on Bitcoin.
Yeah. I mean, my story isn't that different from a lot of people. I'd heard about it a few times, didn't think much of it, bought a little bit a few years back, sold it not too long afterwards. Then I got back in, tried to think I could make money day trading, thought that I could make some money with altcoins. And none of that really worked out. And then I started looking at the technology behind it and the actual implications of what Bitcoin is, what Bitcoin can do, what it can mean for people. And that just spoke to me a lot more. And taking that knowledge and really looking at other projects through that lens, I swiftly lost interest in any of the other ones. I mean, I don't really call myself a Bitcoin maximalist. I sort of am in practice, but I'm not closed-minded to anything else that could potentially come out that would be better. But I don't imagine anything could beat Bitcoin in its work effects. I mean, it would have to be like a order of magnitude. It'd have to be like a 10x improvement for me to really pay attention to any other project. But yeah, like I think these days, what's got me most bullish on Bitcoin are the same things that kind of got me more and more interested as I work. And that's like censorship resistance, seizure resistance. The supply cap is huge too. But I think all those things in Bitcoin, everybody has like a different aspect of it that really like makes it click for them. And unfortunately, a lot of those things that make Bitcoin so valuable in my mind don't really speak to a lot of Americans. You know, inflation before the pandemic had a low, like we can sit on 2% and we'll tolerate it. You know, it's not really going to affect us like it does like in Venezuela or Turkey. But other aspects of it, censorship resistance, seizure resistance, those things haven't been issues for most people either. I mean, now if anybody was paying attention to like the trucker convoy in Canada understands censorship resistance now. People dealing with capital controls in other countries understand seizure resistance, but it doesn't speak to a lot of people here. So like when I tell people, friends and family about it, they don't necessarily think like, okay, is that even a problem to solve? Like what problem is Bitcoin solving? But that seems to be on the horizon. Like the way these days, your possessions, your ability to act and think freely is under threat. And I think Bitcoin solves that issue. So people seeing that now can get on board, can get used to it and use the tool and become comfortable with it before they actually need it. And I think that's huge.
Yeah. And I loved using that Canadian trucker convoy as an orange pilling moment for some people, you know, kind of, you know, judge your audience. And I know people who in the political, you know, scene who's very attentive to it. And I was able to at least give them their first touch with Bitcoin. Oh, have you seen what's going on there? And, you know, they're all fired up about it and tell them about the money being frozen. And then it's an opportunity to drop Bitcoin in there. And not that I completely orange-pilled anybody over it, but it was a good opportunity to provide one of those touches. And, you know, our world's providing touches for many people, and Bitcoin use cases are being presented to us without, you know, Bitcoiners even having to lift a thumb. So, yeah, it's really crazy, you know, all that going on. And I know you're a guy who's huge on privacy and everything. And I see your tweets out there and just, you know, very one thing I've loved about your meetup is like you push out, you know, buying non-KYC Bitcoin on BISC and providing learning opportunities with that down there. But that's something we'll get into a little bit more with your meetup information. But yeah, cool stuff. And so what's been your favorite aspect of Bitcoin to focus on? You know, one of the couple.
I've been pushing people to just self-custody. Buying KYC free on BISC is great. But, you know, if first class Bitcoin citizen, you know, they say you go from third class to second class when you go from second to first when you run your own node. And some people say, you know, the higher echelon, like the sovereign individual, is buying KYC free. So I may have jumped the gun on doing a presentation on February of this year. I think a lot of, you know, people thought it was interesting, but, you know, every meetup runs the gamut with people who are like, they could be super new and less techie, so they're not there yet with that kind of stuff, or they could have been in for a while and just still don't self-custody. But I think like that first step is self-custody, and there's just so many different ways to do that, which is I think a good thing, because you can find the setup that works for you. I know that there are conversations and some like disagreements and arguments preferred between like multi-sig versus single sig and a passphrase and mobile wallets versus hardware wallets only, and air gaps and things like that. Tools are all just great to have, and the first thing is like, you can download, there are some mobile wallets out there that are trustworthy enough to hold a decent amount of your Bitcoin, I think. And to have that peace of mind like that self-reliance, that freedom, I believe makes people a little scared at first, but it also builds inside of them like the desire to become more informed, more responsible, and just doing best practices, because they realize they are taking control of their wealth, of their savings, or at the very least, they're taking a sum of money that in they're taking, you know, cuts. So if their phone breaks, or if they accidentally something like that, then it's on them. So seeing people like have that click in their brain and want to take responsibility, and that leads them to asking more questions, I think those are the best conversations to have, because people that are like super new to the idea of self-custody will ask really interesting questions that I maybe haven't thought about in a while. So it's cool to see everybody comes at it from a different perspective. But yeah, I think I'm realizing now that I may not have answered your question, but but yeah, I think self-custody is just huge, and that's a big focus for the meetup.
Yeah, for sure. And I have a question for you. So you mentioned, you know, mm-hmm. there are new Bitcoin mobile wallets that you could hold a decent amount of Bitcoin on. Mm-hmm. In your perspective, what are those wallets that you think are, you know, a good use or good beginning step for a new person of Bitcoin?
The ones that off the top of my head that I've used that I like, Blue Wallet is a good one because it's multi-platform. Show people on my phone, which is an Android, and if they have an iPhone, it'll look the same. If you want to be, you know, self-custody on the Lightning and the on-chain side, you can use Moon. I think Moon's a great option for people that have that peace of mind where they're still self-custodying, but they can operate on Lightning. Blue Wallet kind of offers that, but it requires a lot more work. Samurai Wallet is a good one, just privacy features that are really the threshold of getting into privacy features is best done, in my opinion, because they have just a really user-friendly user experience I used. And then there's like custodial Lightning wallets, like Wallet of Satoshi, user-friendly. Blue Wallet's Lightning is pretty user-friendly. What's the other big one? But yeah, so those are some of the ones that I push people to. The one I use the most is Zeus, but I mean, that's more of like a controller for my home node. I don't really have Bitcoin, but it's a great tool to have that I can talk to my computer at home, and I still feel pretty self-sovereign doing that.
Yeah, I've been trying to implement Zeus more and more into my Bitcoin usage activity, and just a really cool concept, what a Zeus wallet does. And, you know, it's still in its early days. And, you know, I think it's just going to be such a great product in the future. And to be able to interact and use my node, you know, from my phone is just a really cool aspect of it. Even with this podcast, I'm able to stream it on Fountain. And then if people stream me sats, I'm able to hook up my node straight to Fountain. And I can see from Zeus wallet, you know, what sats are being streamed to me wherever I'm at. So it's really cool what that does. And
I think that's great. You know, that first step of self-custody with the mobile wallet is a good first step. About Zeus is that, yeah, it's like, it sort of markets itself as a Lightning wallet, but it's a great tool to have for on-chain stuff too. I mean, everyone who uses Lightning knows that on a Lightning transaction, you're not guaranteed that the payment will go through, but on an issue. So if you want to use your node from your phone, Zeus is a great way to do it. Blue Wallet also allows you to connect to your node. I haven't done that, so I don't know how. But with Zeus, it's by default. You know, so having that function for layer one, especially now since fees are still pretty low on layer one.
Yeah, but on Blue Wallet, are you able to actually use your channels, or are you just with Electrum on Umbral? You know, you're just verifying that it's actual Bitcoin that you're interacting with. I haven't actually tried it myself, but I know generally when you like connect a wallet, more so it's just verifying that those transactions are real Bitcoin, not so much the fact that like I'm actually using my Lightning channels and my node interface essentially from my phone.
Yeah. So I think it's kind of the same thing. If you're using an Electrum server to verify your transactions and to construct and broadcast them, I mean, to me, that's the same thing as operating directly from Bitcoin Core. There's like kind of an intermediary in between which indexes transactions and allows you to access them a bit better. But it's the same privacy and security assurances. But also with Blue Wallet, you can actually connect to your Lightning node. I think it's through LND Hub is the main way. And I haven't done that either. But like, so there's two different functions in Blue Wallet to connect to your own node, either for onto. At least that's my understanding of it.
Something I'll definitely have to play around with here in my near future free time. And that's the fun part about Bitcoin is there's all these new projects and stuff coming out. And, you know, we get to be some of the first people to test them at times. First few, I should say. I'm definitely not one of the first. But, one of the early users of it, getting to see the growing pains of certain projects. I love seeing the growing pains of the Lightning Network and feeling like I'm, you know, extremely early on Lightning as well. And just really fascinated what's to come with all that.
Yeah, there's a lot of potential there. I think Lightning's fascinating, and I think it solves a lot of the... For me, I don't mind using Layer 1 online, but in having to wait on average 10 minutes for a confirmation is not great. So for my use case, I prefer to use Lightning in person, and I can use if I'm buying something online, or if I'm like sending money to a friend or something like that, or making a donation somewhere. But that user experience of being at the counter, using to make a transaction, having it be quick, having it have certain privacy setting is not there are some lighting as it is, but there's some things, there are trade-offs with Layer 1, so it has some improvements on Layer 1. We don't really have that with any other payment mechanism, like unless you have a gift card with cash and use that everywhere, you still technically tie all of the transactions with that card to that same card. But having those options and like seeing the growth, like you said, how privacy is being improved, the payments are being improved. I've heard a lot of good for Lightning's channel management, the CL boss, things like that, because the management of a Lightning node can be a pain in the ass if you're not an enthusiast. Be able to turn on a node and be like, I want to use this in a self-sovereign way, but I don't want to have to be under the hood every single day. We're not there yet, but it seems to be going in that direction, and that's awesome. Of course, people are always going to use custodial services, but the fact that they can be in different countries and you wouldn't even know it, they could operate from, you know, as long as they're open source, they're probably safe to use. Just game theory behind the design and interoperability, all this stuff just provides a lot of peace of mind because you have options. You can get more under the hood. You can get more in depth with learning about it and experimenting with things. Or you can go the more and have different assurances there. But even there's a spectrum. I mean, like Moon, I like Moon because you get the feel of non-custody Lightning without having to worry about any of the Lightning stuff, because it's basically like it's like a submarine swap. Like you pay on chain and they pay your Lightning invoices is my understanding of how it works. And I think that's cool because you're still not, it's non-custodial, but you don't have to worry about the efforts of operating and managing a Lightning node.
And even like trying to onboard a business, like if, you know, I want to do them the self-sovereign way and, you know, the most self-sovereign way they can and hook them up with the node, but like, trying to talk them through the process of like, okay, now we got to set up channels and, you know, like that's a big pain in the butt. So really looking forward to seeing what kind of payment systems apply to these restaurants here in the future, which will help enable Bitcoin payment adoption easier. So, know, it's cool to think, you know, the way we're doing it now will be a more advanced way than here soon, especially with like, I'm really looking forward to what Spiral's doing with the Lightning Developing Kit and seeing what that, you know, brings forward as well. So who have been some vital figures in your Bitcoin journey in your life so far?
Oh, man. You said figures, right? Like people that have,
knowledge.
I would say that the first person has nothing to do with Bitcoin, but it would be Ron Paul. I try not to get too political these days in general, because I it doesn't spark joy, I guess, in my life. It's one of the reasons why I'm after having a Facebook account for 13 years. But in 2008, when he first ran, it was so much more about the possibilities of freedom and like the philosophy behind freedom and self-responsibility, and also like the way the government operates and how inefficient it is and stuff, to say the least. That's not even getting into like the highs of the way that they operate and like crony capitalism and the deep state and stuff. But just like the inefficiencies of government and the way it, that really sparked in my mind. I didn't know it at the time, but that really gave me an appreciation for decentralization. So when I finally learned about Bitcoin, I was actually kind of led astray a little bit. Like, there was a couple podcasts I would listen to that I don't even want to mention now, because they were not good for me. They were okay at the time. But like one podcast, like, I don't miss. I listen to a lot, too many now. But if I were to get rid of everything I listen to and just listen to one show that I feel like would give me a good sense of, keep my thumb on the pulse of the industry, it would be Rabbit Hole Recap with Marty and Matt. It's a great show. They keep it real. They're funny dudes. And you know, his regular show where he interviews people, and like Matt did a spinoff with Citadel Dispatch. They got some good stuff going on there. So those guys have been influential to me on my privacy journey. Like Jameson Lopp has, I've learned a lot from him. Andreas Antonopoulos, a lot of his videos in the very beginning were super informative. I haven't listened to much of his stuff lately because his interests have kind of veered away from mine. But yeah, those are a few people that, did you watch a lot of Andreas videos? Like, what people were influential to you?
I tried watching his, especially when going down the lightning rabbit hole. I was trying to get, you know, I want to get the base layer understanding of it as much as I possibly can. So I tried giving his podcast a listen, and they're definitely, speeches, whatever. And it's definitely was a little bit out of my league as far as
too technical
level. Yeah. So okay. I even bought his Mastering the Lightning Network book, and I started reading it. I was like, oh, this will be pretty difficult for me without an audio version. So, Seyfi Dina Moose was just such a vital figure in mine. Because I was able to go through and watch like his YouTube, there's YouTube videos of him, you know, Bitcoin versus gold debate. So I started off like listening to those, like, you know, understanding the history of money. I got a degree in history. I wanted to be a high school history teacher. So cool. Just kind of understanding all that. I was wrapped in the politics when COVID happened, living in California. So just was really focused on all that. And then, you know, learning about Bitcoin, the monetary history that we've lived through, it was just seemed like the perfect fix to everything that was going on. If we could at least fix some money, the politics situation may be able to fix in our world as well. So once Bitcoin found me, I've just ditched politics and have completely dove into that. So yeah, Seyfi Dean and his videos definitely helped me. And then, yeah, you know, Citadel Dispatch really helped me start to branch out my Bitcoin knowledge, you know, learn about privacy and some of the more challenging topics, and, you know, growing as a Bitcoiner. And at first it was like, man, like, I'm not self-sovereign enough. I don't have enough privacy. But the more I keep listening, the more it's just like, okay, I need to do baby steps. Like, you know, what newer thing could I do today to improve my privacy, my self-sovereignty? And that, you know, that's been extremely huge for me and my growth. So, and I, you know, a lot of people feel like that about Citadel Dispatch and what he does. So big shout out to him and all that he's doing. So,
yeah, people come at it from different perspectives, but go ahead. You were going to say something?
No, go with it.
I just like to see people, like I mentioned, like the aha moment is kind of different. And sometimes it takes multiple aha moments for people to really like say, this is what I'm going to learn about this every day sort of thing. So we had his day, and it's at a bar, and we don't he doesn't reserve the place for us. So sometimes there'll be people that aren't there for the meetup. And sometimes we have presentation. So there was presentation that day. And afterwards I went to the bar to order a drink, and there was a guy there. He wasn't there for the meetup, and he was asking questions to the owner. And the owner referred him to me. So we were chatting for a bit. And one of the stories I told him that I think is interesting to tell people that don't really get anything outside of the price volatility and the people trying to get rich quick or whatever are like use cases for the inflation, you know, hard cap and all that stuff. But one cool one is are the programmers in Afghanistan. And I forget the program and the lady's name who like, you know, the women in Afghanistan, they aren't able to open bank accounts on their own. You know, they need a brother, a husband, a father to go there with them. So like there was a lady who was teaching these Afghani women to code, getting paid in Bitcoin. And all they needed were a phone and an internet connection. And you tell people that, and sometimes it blows their mind. Sometimes they're like, okay, well, that's cool or whatever. But click with that guy. So I'm hoping like maybe I'll see him at the next meetup. But oh, and actually, I forgot that he said he's a business owner. He owned a bar not too far from where we were at, and he seemed interested in accepting payments with it. So I might end up meeting with him soon.
Yeah, that's cool. And that's the thing, you know, provide one of those first touches and you never know if they're going to be hitting you up for that next touch or, you know, they have another touch in between the next time they hit you up. So yeah. As long as you're providing that first touch of people, you know, we're doing Satoshi's work. And it's that low time preference. We may not see anything right away, like these meetups, you know, getting going. They're hard to, you know, not going to blow your mind away with attendance count, but with a low time preference, you know, it'll be worth it. So I let you keep going because I was going to say, why don't we go ahead and we'll start getting to the meetup. So that's why I was like, by all means, do your thing. So why don't you go ahead and let us know about the San Diego Bitcoiners and just kind of when you guys got going, why, and what's been going up with you now?
Yeah, so we were technically started by somebody else. So you might know her on Twitter, Heather Everdeen. She started this meetup in like January, February, 2021. And she had a pretty decent Twitter following. So she had a couple events and there was a good amount of people that were coming out. That and the fact that she posted the events under the Orange County Bitcoin, you know, Brian Harrington's group. So she immediately had a good response. There would be some influencers and and core devs that would come out, which was pretty cool. And then she and her family had to move. So she was like, you know, somebody's got to take over. Would you be interested? And I was like, yeah, sure. But it feels like I started the Bitcoin. It feels like I started on my own because I had less of a following. I kept the name, but I spun off the meetup group and actually started a schedule group. So the first couple meetings were really small because the following didn't necessarily translate right away. But since then it's gotten great. We have a pretty consistent, like 15 to 20, sometimes 30 people coming to the meetup, which is sweet. Especially when you consider the fact that in San Diego, there are at least four or five or more cryptocurrency related meetups, but we're the only Bitcoin only one. I mean, there's another one in Encinitas, which is like North County. So there's two, and those guys are buddies of mine. So I've been running the meetup since May of last year. So it's been a little over a year. It's been great now that we have like a home with Quantum and Martin accepts Bitcoin for our meetups. I don't think too many people pay their tabs in Bitcoin, but it's kind of cool to have that option, and it helps with like spark the discussion of like that relationship between merchants, consumers, savers, and Bitcoiners. The meetup itself, it's once a month. We meet on the second Thursday of the month. Usually we might skip next month because I'm due to have my firstborn child in the next couple of weeks. So I'm probably going to take that month off. And we've had a couple presentations, but for the most part, it's just hanging out. And our group is a pretty solid group. We get a lot of regulars, people that I know name and face, and see them if not every event, like every two or three at least. And it's just so cool to see it grow into something bigger than my meetup. This is definitely a San Diego Bitcoiners group. We have a matrix chat that's kind of small. There's some conversations that happen there, but the interesting thing is just that a lot of us happen to be on the same page about a lot of things. There are some debates and some disagreements on like Outlook, or sometimes there's people that bring up altcoins and things like that. But that's cool. For the most part, it's a pretty solid Bitcoin only self-sovereignty, self-reliance type of conversations and not too much about price. I mean, some of us do, but it just doesn't seem like a big focus of the meetup. But as far as presentations go, I did one on BISC in February. I did one a couple days ago on just running Bitcoin Core on a desktop computer. Because I think too many people have gotten this in their mind that they have to have a dedicated computer running 24/7 to use a Bitcoin node. And that's just not the case. So I kind of showed them the most simplified of running a node and using it, because I also wanted to talk about Final Message. You know, that's one of Matt Odell's projects. It's a dead man switch and it's paid by Bitcoin. So you delay the deployment of the message by paying Bitcoin. So a lot of people thought that was cool. It's kind of an underrated, like under the radar project. So that's what that presentation was. We had Ben and Ben from the Bitcoin company come and present. I think that was in March. So we've had a couple presentations. It's gone pretty well, gotten good feedback. And it's nice that we can do it in a place that's cool with us taking over more or less the projector, the speakers and all that. And great support from the attendees. Like one of the guys that started showing up a few months ago is like an AV guy and he works at a high school. And he's got like a nice speaker and like mix board set up. So he's been bringing speakers so I don't have to shout in the bar when we're presenting on stuff. So that's been great. Like he's been super supportive. Meetup is awesome. We probably want to get some other events besides just the weekly meetup at Quantum. And I've talked to different people about different things we might do. Oh, actually, that's a good thing to bring up. One of our members started a 501c3 charitable organization. It's called Bitcoin Shaka. And he wants to organize like beach cleanups and things like that and like ask for donations and accept donations in Bitcoin. And he already got the 501c3 approved. We're working on like logistics and stuff, but we're basically going to use the meetup as a means to get people into that and to kind of give back to San Diego to sort of build some goodwill about Bitcoiners. You know, we're not all just get rich quick, destroy the environment with mining sort of people. In my opinion, we just make energy more efficient with mining. But yeah, just to give back to the local community so people can see that, like, you know, our intentions, our thought process, all comes from self-responsibility, once we get that up and running, I think we'll have a good amount of those events, hopefully a few times a year, but we're just getting started, so still some development to do there.
Yeah, you mean you guys aren't a bunch of psychopaths?
Well, we are, just you know, we keep that within our own homes.
Yeah.
And Twitter. Yeah,
so I started, once I moved to Knoxville, I started the Knoxville Bitcoin meetup, but I called it Knoxville Bitcoin Network because I want to be a lot more than just, you know, meetups. And
cool.
With time, you know, I've only been here for, had about five meetups now, four or five, something like that. But, you know, with time, I definitely want to start doing more with a community level, the more I just get my feet implanted here. And I really want to try to reach out to like the University of Tennessee's computer science program or something, and just try to get a plug in to the university and get Bitcoin integrated in there as soon as we possibly can. So just a lot of cool things that meetup groups are doing. And, you know, it's, the more that meetup groups grow, the more that things like that will pop up. And, you know, San Diego with your beaches there, that's a great event to try to get the word out and do things for the community. Because, you know, most of us do care about what the world's going to be like in 50 and 100 years. You know, we want to see the world thrive. Yeah. And a lot of us do care about the cities that we live in and take pride in where we live. So really awesome that you guys are doing that. And that's doing Satoshi's work. So thank you for doing that.
Yeah, man. I mean, I see people who have done well, they've, you know, financially, their lives have been improved because of Bitcoin. And they give back. I see people make donations supporting projects, and I think that's great. I mean, Bitcoin Beach in El Zante was started by an anonymous donor. You know, I make donations from time to time to projects and podcasts that I like to listen to, and a lot of open source software. Like I make donations to Zeus because they don't charge for their software, but the work that they do is important to me. I make donations to Graphene, my phone operating system. But like, you know, I think you and I have a similar mindset in that. I mean, you mentioned it yourself, like giving back to our community is important to us. And there's kind of two different mindsets to that. Like, there are people that want their community to improve, and they figure they can't do anything alone. So their response, their idea is, well, somebody should be doing this. So their response to that is like, the government should be doing this. Like, let's raise taxes. Let's like have groups that are out here organizing things and keeping things clean or supporting the homeless or doing all that stuff. But then there are people that are like, you know, the government is not good at what they do most of the time. Like, just from an inefficiency standpoint, I think I saw a stat that was like, for every dollar they spend, it took $3 of taxes and stuff to make it work. Like, they're just so inefficient that if you want to undo what the government has said, if you don't like what the government does or how society is or the structure, some people think that you can vote it away. Some people think that you can rebel and make it go away. And then there are people that are like, well, we can just improve upon it and make it better, and then there's no point for those groups or organizations to exist. Like, the beach cleanup is a very small example of that, but I mean, you know, they could spend tons of money on signs and people and trucks and all that stuff, but if people were just less damaging as individuals, and then every now and then people came out and did some cleaning that you can't avoid, I think that individuals working together, improving their community, can obviate the need for these systems that we don't want, that we didn't volunteer for, and we could potentially opt out of. And Bitcoin is a big opt-out tool. So I think people who get into Bitcoin kind of get on that same mindset of, what can I do to sort of separate myself from this system that I may not agree with? And some of the times it's just put my head down and obviate it as much as I can, or just ignore it and try to create a better solution or replacement for it. But yeah, so that's like one of the things that drives me to do some of the things that I do. I wish I had more time to do those sorts of things every day. But, you know, we do what we can, right? And sometimes for some of us, the best thing we could do is just give a few sats every now and then to people that are doing the work that we believe in.
Yeah, a big question I ask myself every day, whether it be I'm at work or, you know, at home and there's dishes in the sink or whatever it is, you know, it's, if not me, then who? And that I used to wait on other people, and now I don't anymore, because I'd rather, you know, just get done. And, you know, taking action and doing a little bit, it gives you a good feeling inside. And, you know, knowing that you're doing well for your community and those around you, being of service to people, that's a good feeling. And there's a lot of Bitcoiners out there like that. And definitely, I think a lot of guys, you know, who I've met through the meetups who are willing to help, just like yourself, you know, from the get-go, not even knowing you, just messaging you through Twitter, just so willing to help and be of service to those, you know, in the Bitcoin community.
Yeah. To your point of somebody should be doing, or if not me, then who? When you have to pay money, or when money gets taken out of your paycheck, and or you have to pay property taxes and stuff, when you see something that isn't in your community and you feel like you're paying a lot of money or your livelihood, you know, your hours, your was into that, the first thing you think is, shouldn't somebody be fixing this? Like, why aren't they, what am I paying for? But if none of that was there, I think most people would be more like, okay, well, I should do something about this because no one's around right now and I see this problem and I should fix it myself. But unfortunately, we're not going to get to that situation. We're not going to get to a point where we're not taxed on dumb stuff before we start taking responsibility for our communities. So the responsibility, and then hopefully the other stuff becomes less necessary. So it's easier to convince everyone else that's voting for it that we don't need it. But yeah, I mean, it's inspiring to see the work that people do that they don't get paid for. And this is huge in the Bitcoin space, like free and open source software. I've gone down so many rabbit holes since I've gotten into Bitcoin. I mean, like the privacy one is a big one, like the value of data and information and how it can be used against you and how it's worth not getting an extra 2 or 3% off at the store and use their stupid that they can track you because you'll probably be in a database that they leak. Things like being able to make those choices Oh, sorry. I lost my train of thought for a second. So privacy rabbit hole is a big one. Free and open source software, I've really grown to appreciate and value. And some of the things that I use, I have probably paid them more than they would have charged if it was a commercial product, because I see the work that's being done. And you know that, like, there's no guaranteed stream of income, but they're still working these things and making sure that, like, the code gets out there. And not only that, if it's open source, people can just steal it. So you're working for free and you're creating something that can easily be taken by somebody else and potentially repackaged and sold as a commercial product. So, like, the risk that these people are taking are a risk that I have never been in a position where I could afford to make those choices and live that lifestyle. So I just have so much respect for the people, because when you're building a new financial tool like Bitcoin that can empower so many of these awesome things, and you are working for do it, I mean, that's Satoshi's work right there. And those are the things that we should all be paying more attention to, giving our support to, advertising for, and all that stuff. So that's one of the things that I try to do through this meetup, is get people tools that they're going to be safe to use, but are also, like, the right ethos. I like BISC because their ethos is self-sovereignty in the fiat payment rails. Whereas if people can Coinbase, Kraken, even like Strike, the ethos isn't the same. Like, they are your adversary to an extent. They are incentivized to charge you a lot of fees to withdraw from their platforms because they would rather have you stay there. It's like the incentives are weird for a lot of these companies, but the open source projects are, their incentives are different. They're incentivized to do right by you, to create tools that are work, that are auditable, their security can be audited, and that serve the ecosystem as a whole. So it's just kind of cool to see that stuff being built, and that's just super inspiring to me. I mentioned aha moments a couple times. What are some of your aha moments?
Honestly, it was just when I got told what Bitcoin was. You know, I didn't need more than one touch. It was just, you know,
that's awesome.
Everything that I was missing. Because before, like 3.5 years ago, I was really kind of struggling with alcohol and just got my life into a living hell. And I always remember thinking, like, looking around at the homeless people when I was living up in Redding, California, and remember thinking, like, man, life's just not meant to be this way. You know, why is it? And how come, you know, people would just rather give up than try to keep going? And I was like, oh, it's just it's just life. Like, it's just hard to get going. And then, you know, gotten into politics and everything, have an understanding of our history, and just kind of figuring things out. And, it was all the questions that I had was just fixed by plugging Bitcoin in to so many different things. And I didn't need any more than that. So just, you know, after the one touch, my second touch was just put me even more on fire. So that's awesome. It was just literally being told about Bitcoin is just all I needed to hear. And just because at that point in my life, I was just so anxious to do research and learn in my free time, just kind of moving away, you know, living through COVID, seeing athletes be able to go about their everyday lives pretty much and keep doing things, and we're sitting at home. I just thought it was such BS, and really just gave up on the sports even. And I'm a huge baseball guy. I love baseball so much. But just, I can't even watch pro sports anymore or anything, and just love learning about Bitcoin. So, that was pretty much it, because I worked with the guy who orange filled me too. So, you know, we were always talking Bitcoin. So there's not particularly anything that stands out other than just hearing about it.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that, you know, if Bitcoin is a global payment system and may grow into the world reserve currency, it's kind of interesting to compare that its global scope on its impact individuals. Like, it seems to empower with its your ability to run your own node and to do some to like do things as an individual, that promotes those connections between these groups, between like you and your coworker who orange pilled you. And it happens a lot at meetups too. nobody has ever made Meetup because they both have the same Visa rewards card. You know, it's like that intermediaries and the influence that they have and big tech have over you, and trying to build a world where we are dependent on them is not inspiring, and it doesn't bring people together. It separates us, I think. And it even makes us like less connected to the businesses that we patronize. I mean, like I'll go to, if I don't have, I usually prefer to use cash, and cash on me, I'm like, fuck it, I got to use a card. And that sucks. It doesn't change that much for me because they don't lower the price. Most places don't give you a cash discount. But it sucks for them because they're getting less money. They have to become more dependent on these systems, and it just it just provides those platforms just have more power over these businesses. So if MasterCard decide to with their duopoly to raise the merchant fees, I mean, what are businesses going to do about it? I mean, like only accept Discover and American Express. I mean, they don't really have many options because so many people rely on cards for every single purchase they make. But with cash, that's not an issue. With Bitcoin, it's, you have interoperable different like apps and like ways that you can make those payments. But just in general, Bitcoin is a tool of empowerment. That's how it feels to me. And feeling empowered makes you feel like you want to be more responsible, makes you want to connect with your community, and it builds those connections. And that's definitely seen in the Meetup. Really though, like the main thing that I've grown to realize, that the main reason I continue with this Meetup is that it hones my skills in sort of, I don't need to preach. I mean, a lot of the time I'm preaching to the choir because a lot of our members are on the same page from a philosophical standpoint. And maybe we can share information. It's like I do presentations on things that I've learned about that I think are interesting. And I learn a lot from people and the stuff that they use when they ask questions or when we talk about things before or after the presentation. Really, that's why I go there. I go there to keep my persuasion skills sharpened, because I don't need to convince anybody there that Bitcoin's important or its use case. I go there to get better at it so that when I go home, when I go to family events, when I hang out with friends and people that I love and care about, those are the people that I need to use those skills on. You know, I think Bitcoin is very important, and the only adoption that really matters to me, or the most important adoption that matters to me, are the people that I love. It just so happens to be that I'm starting to get that kind of connection with the people at the Meetup. So like I have that, it's starting to feel like a family. At the end of the day, I need my friends and family, like my blood, to get into Bitcoin, and that is if I can be a good steward of representing Bitcoin and what it can be. You've said this before, like it fixes for us now that it can fix for that it can fix for society, I think. And not having people that I care about and be able to use that now is very important to me. So that's like my primary driver there. And I was looking up this quote the other day, and I still have it on my screen. So I'm going to read it to you if you don't mind. And because it's kind of says some of my thought process on this stuff, and it's from a novel, like this. What's the most horrible experience you can imagine? To me, it's being left unarmed in a sealed cell with a drooling beast of prey or a maniac who's had some disease that's eaten his brain out. You'd have nothing then but your voice and your thought. You'd scream to that creature why it shouldn't touch you. You'd have the most eloquent words, the most unanswerable words. You'd become the vessel of absolute truth, and you'd see living eyes watching you, and you'd know that the thing can't hear you, that it can't be reached, not in any way. Yet it's breathing, and it's moving there before you with a purpose of its own. And that's horror. Well, that's what's hanging over the world, prowling somewhere through mankind, the same thing, something closed, mindless, utterly wanton, but something with an aim and a cunning of its own. And I don't think I'm a coward, but I'm afraid of it. And that's all I know, that it exists. I don't know its purpose. I don't know its nature. And I feel like that little blip kind of explains how people feel about the world around them, whether it's because they feel that way towards the government, or because of their family, their institutions that they work in, I feel like a lot of us feel a little helpless against some kind of beast that we can't influence, that we can't control. But with Bitcoin as a tool, it gives us an opportunity to protect ourselves from the influence of this beast, if that beast is the financial system, the government, crony capitalism, all the things that affect our day-to-day lives and can hurt our livelihood beyond money, like just control and freedom. Any tool that you can have that is an asymmetric tool of freedom like Bitcoin, that's hard for people to take away from you, is to me like the most important things that you can learn more about and learn to wield as a tool of defense. So that's been something that's been on my mind lately as I've been operating through this meetup and keeping it going.
Yeah. And, you know, I love that, how you talk about, like, it keeps my passion for wanting to learn more about Bitcoin going by, you know, organizing the meetup. Mm-hmm. I know I have to keep getting better myself in order to provide the best learning experience for people in Knoxville to keep coming to the meetup. I don't want our meetup to be a, you know, social thing. I want it to be a learning experience for the community. And I want them to feel like, oh, wow, that was a great event that I was able to truly learn something from some people who really seem like they know what they're talking about. And I feel like they know what they're talking about because they are so passionate by the way they talk about it. And that's what I run in the meetups. And I mean, I'm still very new to Bitcoin. I got in February 2021. So going to these meetups provides me an opportunity to learn from some really great Bitcoiners who have been in the space longer than me. And mm-hmm. that's been, you know, such a vital thing for me. I got a buddy who I work with, and he blows my mind away with how much knowledge he has. And I'm able to just learn so much because he's been through, you know, so much more than I. And it's just been such a useful tool for myself alone, just by putting on the meetup. I've been able to connect with so many great Bitcoiners and learn so much. And then that quote, you know, that's the thing with people, is they, so many people just know there's something wrong. You know, there's evil in this world, and evil is really getting a hold of society nowadays. And Bitcoin, you know, like you kind of said, like, it's almost like a, you know, empowers you. Well, having a low time preference is, I believe, like a superpower now, because it just changes your mind and puts you on such another level than the normies around you in your life. You know, just having more and more of a low time preference day by day has just dramatically improved the quality of life that I live. And, you know, you just don't necessarily stress on things anymore. You know, stuff's going on. There's everything burning behind you. Like that meme, you know, but you're just enjoying your ice cream, walking down the street, you know, no biggie. Having a low time preference and being a Bitcoiner, you know, really makes you feel that way. So I loved how you talked about that quote, you know. Yeah, that's what's going on in our world. It's been going on in our world, but for now, you know, I feel like people have an opportunity for the first time. They're able to choose their own money. They're able to choose their own freedom system with Bitcoin.
Yeah, you don't feel as powerless necessarily as a lot of us used to potentially. And that's a powerful thing. I think that decentralization as a concept is very important when a relationship with, like the world. I mean, if we could decentralize the government, you know, I have a lot of libertarian leanings, but I'm not going to sit here and say that rest until all governments are destroyed. But I would really appreciate less power federally, more power in the states, more power in my city, in my county, because then you have even more of an influence over the world that is around you and affects you. A lot of good things that come out of low time preference. Building, like, it's one thing to think about, like, if you're like getting into a new exercise routine and you got to wake up every day and really think about, okay, what am I doing today? I got to set an alarm. I got to go out and I got to do it. And you kind of have to think about it. But low time preference as a mindset, if it becomes your, that's like one of the most valuable things you can develop in life in general, is that your first thought is, how is this going to affect things? Not today, but later, next, tomorrow, next week, next year, whatever. And that's huge, because if you can do that and think about the future, chances are your future is going to be better than it would have otherwise if you were just focusing on the today stuff.
Yeah. And I know, you know, when I was living my high time preference life, you know, drinking a bunch, drugging, whatever, you know, it was always about now. How, what am I going to do now? How am I going to get out of this now? How am I going to make myself feel better now? And then, you know, that fiat lifestyle comes along with it and you're just sucked in it. You know, it is truly, it imprisons you when you get there, and it is a hard place to get out. And, yeah, it's just such incredible things, you know, and especially because I was wanting my life to go down this direction more, but then, you know, living through COVID in California and all that, you know, it was just like, oh my God, like I'm not going to be able to get out. And then I read The Sovereign Individual, and just that really, that was a great, you know, that really helped propel my Bitcoin conviction a lot more, because that really helped me understand the power of my choice that I have. And that also helped me be able to, you know, talked about we're able to vote with our feet and everything and just get up and move. And I just, it really got me thinking, like, man, people in the old days used to just get up and leave their family, and that, you know, they might go their lifetimes without ever catching up with them again. But COVID helped me realize, like, we have the technologies that, you know, yeah, it sucks not having that physical connection with my family, but I'm still able to connect with them. And, you know, I just wasn't seeing a path to a better future in the fiat system living in California. So I was like, I got to get out of California, and I got to take a chance and an opportunity and at least go to a more, you know, thought friendly state than where I was at. So,
definitely,
you know, it's definitely a decision leaving, but ultimately it's just like, you know, there's just so much power in doing that, and you can really change the direction of your life. And so far, it's what I'm seeing.
That's great to hear. I always like to hear stories of people who take the reins and take a risk, especially when it works out. So I'm glad that change has been positive for you. But like, really, you know, so you've mentioned the points of low time preference. And I feel like when you're living in the now, when you have a high time preference, it's kind of like that saying, not the destination, because when you're living a high time preference, there is no journey. You're at now, and that's all you can think about. But if you lower your, you can think about and care about the future, not only does it instill hope because you think about a positive future, you're living a journey at that point. You know, you have something to look forward to. And that's something that a lot of people maybe don't have, especially the last couple of years. To not have something to look forward to because now seems so shitty, is a terrible place to be, a terrible way to live. But, you know, it's hard to tell somebody, well, you know, it'll be better tomorrow. You just got to work through it. And it's like, that gets you to tomorrow. That doesn't get you to next year. A low time preference and really understanding that the little bits you're doing now, because you were doing them a year ago, and where it got you to now, if that's, you know, hopefully a much better place, then it only just goes up from there. It's like compound interest. It's like the amount of time you can spend making those low time preference choices are the things that build an optimistic of the future. Like, yeah. It sounds like you've got a little bit of that. So that's cool.
Yeah. And, you know, Bitcoin's really made me want a family more than anything. Like, the longer I keep getting into Bitcoin, I have a fiance as well, so that helps. But, you know, I can't wait to get married and start working on having a family. I want to, you know, I can't wait to see my family grow. I can't wait to see Bitcoin grow. And I feel like something good is coming around the corner. We're going to have to hold on tight and, you know, ride through some choppy times here. But, you know, if you are paying attention to what's going on in the world, hopefully you are doing your best to prepare as much as you possibly can for what's coming ahead. And, you know, I just hope to be on, you know, the greener side on the other side of this all. And because of Bitcoin, I truly feel like I will be. And the more I keep learning about Bitcoin, the more I just am convinced that this is a way for a lot of people around the world to escape that place where I was at a few years ago. And to think that, these people who have it even worse than I did, living in these third world countries who have been living under oppression for years, they have a fighting chance and they have the most incentive and they can reward or reap the benefits of so much if they adopt a Bitcoin standard of their own and without permission.
Yeah, it gives the I first heard the term of an asymmetric tool. I think it was in the context of like battle, like an asymmetric tool of defense. It kind of reminds me of who's that guy, Jason, what's his name, the Air Force guy that was like all over Bitcoin Twitter talking about how Bitcoin is violence. And people were like pushing back on that. But
last name.
Yeah. But anyway, I thought about that and I was like, well,
Jason Lowry.
Yeah. Lowry. An effective defense may seem like a violent tool, but it only seems that way to somebody that's an aggressor. That was the conclusion that I came to. So having an asymmetric tool that gives power to the individual, like you said, to people in third world countries, they're relying on the power of cryptography because that's one of the driving forces making Bitcoin stable for and decentralized and empowering to individuals. That's great. More tools like that. Bitcoin is a financial one. It would require a lot more for people to get out from under the thumb of an oppressive government. But, the internet was a big one too for a lot of people. And the more tools that become available to people, the less authoritative regimes have to hold over their head. But to bring it back to, bring it back home. Congratulations on getting engaged. When's the wedding? You guys have a date?
We literally just figured out a date over the past few days. So October 7th of next year, we're going to fly back home and have it in the San Luis area. So
sweet. Not
far away from Bakersfield, that way all the family could come out. So yeah, really looking forward to that and ready to get that going.
Yeah, that's great, man. October 7th is my best friend's birthday. So you'll be sharing an important day there.
She asked me, she was like, okay, I just can't decide. So, just pick a day. And I was like, October 7th. And she's like, no way. And I was like, what? And she's like, that's my grandma's birthday. And I just absolutely adore grandma. And I was like, yeah, but like, let's be real. What are the chances that that's on a Saturday or, and sure enough, it's on a Saturday and it's her grandma's 80th birthday. So we just got to break the news to her. And my grandma passed away a year ago or almost a year ago. So and me and her were super tight. So it was a way to pay a little tribute to, I think it's just a, certain coincidence that we get to pay a little tribute to my grandma as well by celebrating her grandma's birthday. But yeah, looking forward to that. And it'll be a cool, it's her 80th birthday too. So it'll be a really cool thing to kind of do both. We're going to have it at like an Airbnb. That way we're not spending too much money and work on saving up for a house and stuff too. So it'll be like a family barbecue, essentially party, so it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
That's the way to do it. We were supposed to get married on July 18th, 2020. But then the pandemic happened. So we postponed the big wedding, but we still did the small thing. So we did kind of the same. My dad got ordained. He was going to be the officiants anyway. So we're like, well, we have all the paperwork and stuff. Let's just go to the beach, do the rites of passage or whatever. And then we went to my wife's parents' place, which wasn't too far from, they live close enough to the water. And we just got some high quality Mexican food and I got really drunk and it was great. There was like 14 of us. It was a cool, small little thing. And we did the big wedding a couple years, but the small family get-togethers are a good way to do it. I think there's so much pressure on, especially for somebody who like is in that low time preference mindset, pressure and like conflict in saving for and blowing a bunch of money on an event like a wedding. So that seems to be an interesting choice, people just being more reasonable about that. But honestly, like I've talked to a lot of people who have had small weddings in the last few years, and almost everyone across the board says it's just more, it's easier to enjoy it. There's less pressure. You're blowing less of your family's nest egg on it, and it can be just experience. But so yeah, wish you a lot of luck on that. That's a great place to be at.
Oh yeah, thank you. I'm looking forward to it. And it's just cool because, you know, we've been able, she's been so supportive through all this Bitcoin journey. She's been willing to pack up and move with me. And just really cool, you know, that we get to grow through this journey together. And, you know, it's just going to be really cool what Bitcoin is able to do, you know, for the rest of the world, but for us, you know, as well. So, yeah, really looking forward to that. And just, you know, take the low tide preference in my relationship. Like, can't wait to watch a family grow. And I'm just really looking forward to that. And like you said, just really optimistic towards the future for the first time.
That's awesome. I for a while I thought that having big bike path and being in a more stable place would have put me, like, I would have assumed that I was spending more time and focus on myself, but I did. Like, once I had a super optimistic outlook of the future, the first thing I thought of was growing a family. So I'm super stoked that we're on that path now, because like we've been together a long time, and since the pandemic, so just in a couple years, we bought a house, got married, got a dog, got pregnant, like all this stuff in like such a short time span. But it's been such a great ride that like all the terrible aspects of the pandemic, both the health and the oppression, government oppression parts of it, have seemed not so bad because we've built a home that we don't mind being stuck in, I guess.
Yeah. And, you know, I as much as COVID sucked, COVID was a great year for me. As far as just, it was kind of my great awakening to the world. It's when me and my fiance worked together for a year and a half before starting to date then. So, you know, just everything kind of really turned around, just really felt like I was getting momentum with my life. And just really felt like I actually knew what I wanted with my life for the first time. So as much as I hate COVID, I'm also grateful for it, because I was a sleeping sheep before. So, Well, to go back to a little bit to your, or what were you going to say?
Oh, just that if you can, you know, COVID's one of those things can survive. Not, and I don't mean physically, I just mean like mentally. It makes you stronger. So that's definitely something that I think both of us got out of it.
Oh yeah, for sure. I'm definitely, you know, a lot more. Yeah, I just feel so much more mentally stronger than what I used to be after doing all that. So the back and forth, the goalpost moving, you ain't toying with me no more. I opted out. just kind of a last final thing with the meetup, just kind of what are some reasons why somebody new should come to the San Diego Bitcoiners, or somebody from out of town, why they should go check you out, and just kind of any future things coming up you got going with your group?
I think if you are relatively new to the space and want to ask questions to a group of people, you can get, you know, don't trust, verify. So, I mean, I could tell you my opinions on all sorts of stuff and how you might want to set up your wallet, your cold storage, all that. But we have a good amount of diversity in people that visit, so you can get different opinions on some of that, which is great. If you've been around a while, or if you have something to share, like a tool or even a tool that you're developing, we don't really do like businesses like selling themselves, like marketing. But if you're building a tool that you either want help with or something like that, you know, we'd love to have more presentations. And of course, you know, if you're looking for a reason to visit San Diego, the beaches and the Mexican food, if that's not enough, then hopefully the meetup will be. But there's a lot of great things about being here. And you've used the word California, and that's a word I use a lot too. There's a lot of things that people understand who don't live in California about what it's like to be here. But there's so much good that outweighs the bad, which is, you know, if that wasn't the case, I wouldn't be here. But I also think that in a place where things aren't the way that you want them to be, that's the best place to be if you want to have an impact and change things. So, you know, sometimes I feel like I say this kind of jokingly, but kind of not, I feel like California and probably New York State as well. These are the front line of America's battle with authoritarianism, specifically communism. It's making its way through the country, I think, and it's not great for a lot of reasons. And I think a good place to fight it is here. If I were to leave, I don't know that it wouldn't follow and, you know, like virus to the next place that I would move to. So at least for now, as long as I can talk of living here and the taxes and some of the weird rules, San Diego is not a bad place, not a bad pocket of California to be in for sure. So I think our meetup is, to bring it back to the meetup, our meetup is, we are very welcoming. There's a lot of good people there. My only sort of rule, or the only time I try to put pressure on the atmosphere or the directions of conversations, if I feel like there's risk of somebody being scammed. You can talk about whatever altcoin you want. If you were to come into my meetup and talk to a brand new person about Solana, I'm going to verbally rip your head off, because I've been scammed a few times and I don't want people to come into our place looking for a safe space where they can learn about Bitcoin and risk thinking that they could find the next Bitcoin because you're a scammer. Besides that, totally cool atmosphere and open to any kinds of conversation. So if anybody listening to this plans on visiting San Diego and wants to join our meetup, hit me up on Twitter. My handle is kind of Lomaticist, but you can find me by searching Corey San Diego also.
Yeah. And you know, that's the thing. It's Bitcoin only, Bitcoin focused meetups. And, you know, I'll be pretty calm and collective, but if there's somebody really trying to shill any, other cryptos, because there is a difference between Bitcoin and crypto, that's when I'll definitely start speaking out. And I know I'm not the only one, because a lot of the Bitcoiners who have been around since like at least 2017, you know, a lot of them went down the crypto rabbit hole too. And, you know, that's why they're such hardcore Bitcoiners now, is because they did get scammed and they're not okay with that anymore. And, you know, we need those people to speak out. So kudos to you for doing that. That's how most Bitcoin meetups seem to be. Nobody's here tolerating it. So appreciate you doing that. And just kind of a couple more questions. Kind of any projects in the space that you're looking forward to or events coming up?
Bitcoin conference seems interesting, that because it's so close. But as far as projects go, I think that what's happening with Fediments is super interesting as an onboarding tool. I'm looking forward to see how that develops. And just the not so new stuff, like I'm a big fan of Sparrow Wallet. So to see the developments that Craig Raw has been putting into Sparrow and how it's so easy to use for people, and there's privacy and cold storage tools, I think that's awesome. I'm always keeping an eye on the developments there.
Yeah, the guy from Kent Bitcoiners, his name's Rick, he brought up Fediments too, and it was my first time hearing about it. And I was like, what? To be honest, I'm not even sure what that is. So interesting that has popped up, you know, pretty frequently in the last week. And I guess that's something I need to look into. But yeah, Rick from Kent Bitcoin in the UK brought that up as well. So cool. Definitely something I'll have to check out. And then just kind of final thoughts on the Bitcoin space and what's going on in the world around us right now.
Like I said, we joke a lot on Twitter that Bitcoin fixes everything. I think it can make a lot of improvements in your life, but you know, the grass is greener where you water it. It, no matter what, the best experience you're going to get out of using and having buying Bitcoin is going to come from tools and doing a certain amount of DIY. If you just buy and hold on Cash App or Coinbase or something, you will appreciate price increases, but that's the only benefit that you get out of it. You won't get self-sovereignty. You're not getting the seizureship resistance and censorship resistance. And like I mentioned in our meetup on Thursday, I briefly talked about forks. There's a chance that what you hold will no longer be Bitcoin at some point, because the CEO of that company thinks that there's an upgrade that is better, but really it's different and not the same asset. So definitely take responsibility. And, you know, there's lots of tools out there and there's lots of great people who can walk you through it. Lots of good guides. But the important thing is that it's so accessible. You know, I think of like rights a lot. You know, like what is a right? A lot of people have a viewed understanding of what rights are. And really a right is something that you can exact permission from somebody else. So that could be either because it's it doesn't, or because you're using a resource that is so abundant that its use goes basically unnoticed. So you think of like air, right? I mean, it's air is a resource, but it's, you have a right to breathe in a sense, because there's so much of it that you're not taking it away from anybody else. So as long as you're not, you know, as long as you're not doing that, as long as you're not in or sucking the, or robbing from individual, you have a right to do certain things. And I think that applies to Bitcoin, ironically, because people think of Bitcoin as the, you know, it's scarcity. It's a hard cap supply. So it's like the most scarce thing to ever, to provably ever exist, right? Well, I would argue that there's an abundance aspect to Bitcoin too. Bitcoin, the token, the asset, is scarce. Bitcoin, the network, is like as abundant as the internet. And that access is what makes it so powerful, makes it decentralized, makes it so empowering. So if you're not exercising that right to use that network, to access that network, you're missing out on like a lot of the important aspects of Bitcoin in my mind.
Yeah, that's a really cool way of, you know, wording it. I haven't necessarily heard it in those words, but yeah, and not even as accessible as the internet. It is as accessible as internet. You know, it's internet money. And, you know, you just look at, you know, what the internet did for freedom of information. And just to think, you know, the rabbit holes we wouldn't be able to go down now if we didn't know how to go out there and do some research. If you just go out Google and YouTube some things, you more than likely aren't going to come across Bitcoin and have a conviction for just Bitcoin. You know, but if you know how to do some research and navigate through the internet and navigate through the FUD, you know, more than likely you're going to come out with a orange pill Bitcoin conviction. So just, yeah, really cool way of putting it and some great final thoughts. So Corey, I just want to say thank you for joining me today. I really appreciate getting to know you. First time getting to really talk a whole lot besides, you know, involving the nodes. So it's been great getting to meet you. Look forward to hopefully meeting you in the future one day. Wish you could be coming out to Nashville next month. But congratulations on the kid coming. And, you know, that's what we need. We need more men in this family having kids and raising, you know, nuclear families again. And I think that'll be another vital aspect to having a beautiful future, is bringing back the nuclear family. And that's something me and you have in common. And I think a lot of Bitcoiners in general. So congratulations. And just kind of final thoughts and how to reach out to you.
Yeah, so Twitter is probably the easiest way to reach out to me. I'm also on Matrix and Keybase, but I see Twitter the most. So Infarmaticist is my handle. It's Infarmatic. It's pretty long, but if you search Corey San Diego, that's where I'll be. And Shane, thanks a lot for having me on this podcast. Good luck to you and your fiance as you guys get ready to plan the wedding and everything. And you know, if you want any planning tips or anything, just hit me up.
I will do, for sure. So yeah, that's all we got today on Hard Money, Hard Knocks. Thank you for joining us. For those listening to previous episodes, coming across production issues, I'm sorry, working on it. Hopefully those will be ironed out here shortly. But once again, you can listen on Fountain App, Apple, Spotify, YouTube. We're on Twitter, Hard Money, Hard Knocks, Hard KBN. And that's all we got today. Corey, thank you for joining us, and keep stacking hard.